I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak.
Greed, deception, abuse of power, that's no plan.
They keep knowledge, you know, they're total masters of deception. They manipulate everything. You know, these pricks at the hell that lie to us.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody it's a lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
They're setting it up for the Great Deception.
Yeah, I mean, it all revolves around the Great Deception. Right?
Yeah, bingo. And L.A. and I talked about that. I said, L.A., is this the Great Deception? And he didn't hesitate. He said, absolutely.
I never used to question before, and now I question everything.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
And welcome to the Great Deception Podcast. I'm your host, Matt. Thanks for joining me. Guys, you want to support the show? Got a couple of ways. If you want to get extra content, get some extra materials, you can go to the Great Deception Podcast on Patreon.com. So Patreon.com/the Great Deception Podcast. I got all the Monday Night Master Debater videos out there. All these, you know, Great Deception shows are out there as well, or will be. I'm working on getting the older ones uploaded. And also, I got about 70, 75 old books out there, and I'm starting to put old documentaries out there as well. And those are starting to collect in my repository as I gather more and more. So I love sharing them with people. So go check out there. If you want to get merch, you can go check out the show notes in the link below, and you go to the merch store. We got t-shirts, we got sweatshirts, Monday Night Master Debaters, and Great Deception gear both. So go check it out. Cool stuff. Also, like, share, and leave a review. I know on Apple and Spotify, you can leave reviews or leave comments on the shows. It really helps, guys. The more interaction we get on these, the more likely we are to be put in the algorithm. So when people search, we show up. So if you think the content is worthy, please like, review, share with your friends. Best way to help out and grow the show. And things have been pretty stagnant lately, to be honest. So I'd like to try and get some new folks on board. So also, if you want to leave feedback, that's a great place to do it. And I do read all the comments that are put out there for the show, so it will get read. And if you leave a review, and I see it, and Apple actually shows it to me, I will put it up here as well in the next following podcast that I have. So good way to interact with you guys. I love interacting with people. On the Patreon also, I try to do a monthly Zoom only patron call. It's not recorded, nothing like that. It's just, you know, us shooting the stuff and having some good conversations, like-minded people getting together and just talking about stuff. So pretty cool. Good bunch of people there too. So go check it out, see what you think, and support the show. So we are now going to get to tonight's topic. And it's funny how things kind of, I don't like the word manifest, but things start to come together when you start working on something. So I was first working on an episode on the book Rulers of Evil by F. Tupper Saucy. And that talks about how the influence of Rome and the Jesuits on America, and you know, a lot of shady stuff and things that went on, and deception and greed and power and all that. And you know, I'm looking at that, and then all of a sudden, I go to Connecticut to visit my sister and my niece and my brother-in-law, and I'm down there, and you know, they got Netflix, so I popped that on, and I saw this American Conspiracy, the Octopus Murders, and I'm like, what's this? And I'm like, oh, this is, you know, the Enterprise is how some people know them as. Charlie Robinson's done some good work, so if you have any want to get more information, go check that out too. But this is about a whistleblower, or a potential whistleblower, a guy who is uncovering dirty dealings, money laundering, murders, drug dealings, you know, throughout the government. And he was about to uncover it, and he ended up dead, suicide, and you know, cut his wrist, one wrist, 12 times so deeply that it cut the ligaments. You know, you think about that, and it's really probably, so how did he cut the other wrist, right? Did he start hacking one and then the other? I mean, it's, we'll get into that when we get into that whole episode, but a potential whistleblower murder. All right. And then what happens? So I was doing some research for that, and you know, looking at government corruption, and yeah, I know some people are like, oh, well, you know, they're used to me just doing the old world. And like I've said before, part of the old world is, you know, with my buddy being sick, I just don't have my heart in it right now. Although he just put out an episode a couple weeks ago, and I got a little motivation there. So you will see some more Chicago World Fair and World Fair from the old times and potentially new times, if things go as planned. So we'll get back to there. But right now I'm going through and looking at other forms of deception. Okay, and things that have, you know, progressed and grown exponentially over the last 30 years. And one of the things that is driving this, and one of the biggest issues in our country today, is corporate greed and the need for quarter over quarter profits. And some are willing to go to any lengths to accomplish this. And that's what we're going to deal with tonight. Tonight, we are going to look at the story of Boeing and the whistleblower suicide. Okay, so any of you that aren't familiar with it, we're going to go through it tonight. But Boeing has had numerous issues in the last, you know, specifically in the last like decade, big time issues. And they've been just magnified in this calendar year. There was 5 incidents in 1 week. There was incidents in January. And when I say incidents, we're talking loose bolts. We're talking fuel leakage. We're talking landing gear issues, you know, pieces of the plane falling off, doors of the plane falling off, and failures of systems, and causing crashes, causing deaths. And not all of them, right? Not all of these are causing deaths, but there have been a lot of deaths, and there's been people injured lately. It's just, it's a wild series of events that's taken place. Now, coincidentally, while this is going on, there was a hearing taking place because a Boeing whistleblower was filing complaints against Boeing, not only for harassment and things like that, but he was filing complaints against their work because he saw what was going on. He saw the corners that were being cut. He saw the issues with the employees and the way the company was being handled. And he has been speaking out since 2017. Now, what are we talking about here? Guys, we're talking about 2 plane crashes in 2018 and 2019 that killed 376 people. We're talking about major issues that are putting people's lives at risk. And then you have someone who comes out and talks and speaks against the machine, and they wind up suicided. Tell me there's something not suspicious about that. I mean, and you look at this, you know, the tie between American conspiracy and this is that whole concept of the whistleblower, the truth teller. In today's society, man, you do not want to be one of these guys because you end up with a hole in your head or your wrist cut or you're hanging from a tree with two bullet holes to the head. You know, you look at Danny Castellaro. He was viciously suicided, I will say. You look at Seth Rich, what happened to him for coming out on the DNC stuff. You see what happened to recently in the one of the last episodes, we talked about Gonzalo Lira, who was telling the truth about Ukraine and Hunter Biden. He ends up dead over in Ukraine. You look at the biggest case in my lifetime is Julian Assange. He's locked up for whistleblowing against the government. And it's just, it's heart-wrenching. It's demoralizing when you see that these people are trying to do the right thing. They're trying to speak up and they end up dead. Now, is it just negligence and incompetence? I can't buy that. These are multi-billion dollar companies. They're not run by stupid people. They may be run by evil people, but they're not run by stupid people. So these people know what they're doing. And one of the biggest issues here is not only are we looking at these big companies, but then we get into the lobby and how that plays a role in this and how these companies come in and they pay people to lobby for them to get certain laws passed, to get regulations cut or changed to benefit them, to what? Increase profits. And that's the bottom line. It's money. That's all that drives this. And we're going to see this because Boeing had a great reputation in the, you know, 70s and 80s. And I mean, they go back 100 years. And anybody that's interested, I will put there's a chronology of Boeing in my PDF in the show notes, so you can check that out. And then also the two documentaries that I'll reference in here can also, there's links in the show notes. So if you want to check those out, feel free. I recommend both of them. Really, really good work. So things are not good for Boeing. Now, what's interesting, and again, another tie between the Danny Castellaro case is what came out recently, that he made a prediction before his death and he told friends that if anything happens, it wasn't suicide. It's the same thing Danny told his brother. He told him a couple days before it happened. He told him before that, but he told him again, hey, if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. And this one, when we get to the actual case of it, it's interesting. And again, it's almost too perfect. Okay. The timing of it all. So what we're going to look at right now is a little background on Boeing. It was one of the, you know, first aircraft manufacturers over 100 years ago and put out some of the biggest aircraft, most significant aircraft in aviation history. It's gotten even bigger with different acquisitions over time. And it's been kind of one of the leading aircraft manufacturers since 1916. Okay, started by William Boeing of the Aero Products Company. He started that, and that morphed into, it soon changed to the Boeing Company and then became a leading supplier to the military. Okay, plans for the Boeing 747 were developed in the early 1960s. 1966, Pan Am placed an order for 25 jumbo jets deliverable in 3 years. Now, Boeing gambled here almost everything it had to make this work. And even though the time frame was short, the design wasn't complete. Production plant still had to be built. right? So what did they do? They had to change the way they build aircraft. So more than 65% of the workforce was subcontracted to companies, and construction began on a new modern assembly building in Everett, Washington. By the time the building, the world's largest under a single roof, was complete, all the pieces needed to build the jet airliner would be assembled there. The only parts manufactured at the Everett facility, were the wings and the forward body sections, including the flight deck. Employment at Boeing was at an all-time high. They had 142,000 working directly for the company and thousands more for suppliers, many of which were based in Washington. And then you get to the latter half of the 70s, and after, you know, there was what was called the Boeing bust, where they hit some troubles in the late 60s, early 70s. But by the end of the 70s and the recession had kind of waned, Boeing began to take off again. The plane sales were up. They had military contracts. And, you know, by the 80s, they had, you know, about 100,000 people employed. So most of this is attributed to T.A. Wilson, who was the CEO at the time. And all of this kind of followed between what I mentioned before was a collaboration between Boeing and Pan Am to build new aircraft, you know, and one of them was a 707, which, or, you know, trying to build bigger aircraft, bigger than this 707, which was huge at the time. Okay, this is, you know, groundbreaking stuff. And then what happens? Well, they acquire McDonnell Douglas in 1977 and for $14 billion. Now, unfortunately, this went away from Boeing's past reputation of spending money upfront for quality products, you know, having this groundbreaking engineering. And then they went to, like, what, you know, more of a, they call it cutthroat culture, but it's all about keeping costs down and upgrading older models at the expense of innovation, right? So this is what we see with a lot of corporations today, really low on the innovation, and they're just worried about profit. Not worried about quality, right? They don't want to spend extra for quality parts and make things that last. They're in it to make it as cheap and effective as possible. What's the bottom line? Okay. So the company retained the Boeing name, but the new emerging company was very different. And it says the fatal flaw line was the McDonnell Douglas takeover. Although Boeing was supposed to take over McDonnell Douglas, it ended up the other way around. And since the start of the jet age, Boeing has been less of a business and more of an association of engineers devoted to building an amazing flying machines. For a time, this served it well. And an engineer's company made planes to make engineers proud, whatever the cost. Employees enjoyed watertight contracts thanks to an assertive, family-like union and an attitude toward aviation that put design and quality above all else. In the process, it produced some of the world's greatest planes. The 707 was the first commercially successful jet. The 727, okay, allowed airlines to reach airports in developing world with shorter runways. The company's philosophy, as a close observer described it, to researcher Edward Greenberg, it was go for it and damn the expenses, not damn the quality. And that's the way things used to be. Remember when things were meant to last, not this throwaway society we're in. It was quality over quantity, quality over profit. Now it's just, they don't care about quality. Look at all these manufacturers that have massive recalls. I mean, you look at the new cars, you get a new car, man, especially, I mean, I know I had issues with my Bronco, where Ford was, I had recalls every year for the first 3 years. Yeah, they're getting it right in the end, but they should have gotten it right in the design. But I'm sure they cheaped out on some stuff, some parts here and there, and then you end up with a faulty machine. Now, there's a big difference, and we'll see that in a little bit, between a car or an appliance and an airplane, and when they fail. Okay, so Boeing ended up taking 60% of the industry's new commercial aircraft orders, and then in 1998, after the merger, they weren't in place. They needed to quit behaving like a family and become more like a team. If you don't perform, you don't stay on the team. Everything seemed to be changing, the leadership, the culture, even the headquarters, with a move from Seattle to Chicago in 2001. Even the company's ethos seemed to change, he says. There was a kind of inherent ethic about how you went about designing and manufacturing and flying planes that carried passengers as opposed to flying military planes. That approach was applied to upgrading the 737, which had become a victim of its own success. In its five-decade history, airlines have cumulatively ordered more than 10,000 of the 737s, an aviation rock star. But rather than retiring the plane and replacing it with the next big thing, Boeing instead opted to keep costs down by just tinkering and adjusting the model to fit even more passengers. Then they called it the MAX, which was the alternate to the cheaper solution. Okay, so we get this great documentary in 2014. Now, what was it? It was the, it's called The Boeing 757 Broken Dreams. It's an Al Jazeera investigation. And I highly, highly recommend it to everybody because it is, it's good. And I linked it in here, but we're going to listen here to a couple minutes of them going undercover in with one of the employees to see what the other employees feel about what goes on in their plants.
This is a Boeing factory in the U.S. state of South Carolina. Workers here in Charleston are assembling the company's flagship product, the 787 Dreamliner. But this footage reveals some have little faith in the plane they build.
Did you fly on one?
No.
You won't fly on one. Did you fly on one of these planes?
No, not really.
Of 15 workers asked randomly, 10 said they would not fly on the Dreamliner.
I wouldn't fly on one of these planes because I see the quality going down around here.
An employee captured the footage after contacting Al Jazeera to tell us he had serious concerns about what he was seeing. At his request, we changed his voice.
With all the problems reported on the 787, there's 90% that's getting swept away, hushed up. It's an iceberg.
In another meeting, the source told us workers are often underskilled, uncaring, and in some cases, on drugs.
I've seen a lot of things that should not go on at an airplane plant. People talking about doing drugs, looking for drugs.
It's all coke and painkillers and what's that other one? You can get weed here. It's a really good weed here. They don't drug test nobody.
I know they don't.
Yeah, there's people who go out there and lunch and go smoke more of that.
Do they?
Over the course of a year, Al Jazeera's investigative unit has spoken with a number of former Boeing engineers and machinists who have little faith in the Dreamliner. One shared documents from 2010, which he said showed Boeing loosening its own quality requirements. In one memo, managers tell engineers schedule may require deviations to Boeing's preferred quality process. The company denies it weakens quality control. But the documents alarmed the former president of Boeing's Engineers Union, herself an engineer at the company, for 32 years.
They're shortchanging the engineering process to meet a schedule, and they're not even allowing quality control to do their job.
How does that make you feel as a flyer?
Oh, yeah, I'm not flying on a 787. That just makes, Because I've been kind of avoiding flying on a 787, and seeing this, I would definitely avoid flying on a 787.
Boeing notes its memo states it does not signify authorization to ship parts that don't meet quality requirements. Boeing also says it drug tests in line with company policy and applicable law.
The number one focus that we have at Boeing is ensuring that the continued safe airworthiness of an airplane, the integrity of the airplane, and the quality of the airplane going out.
The company denies it compromises safety or quality. Will Jordan, Al Jazeera.
Right? They deny they mess with safety, yet you have an engineer who was there for 32 years who said she would not fly on the Dreamliner, the 787. That's scary, right? And you hear the drug issues, painkillers. You have people that are building and constructing parts for these airplanes on painkillers. Not what you want. Again, they're in the air. Something goes wrong, it's catastrophic for the most part. Not good. I mean, it's a lot more significant, and you see it over and over in that. Would you, asking the employees, would you fly on? No. Well, the guys that are building them won't fly on them. What does that tell you? They're death trap. And that's not good. So let's look at some recent issues. So first here we have a video from a Boeing flight where the plane began to nosedive.
Okay, we just had some bad turbulence.
This is the shocking aftermath on board a Boeing 787 after it dropped abruptly during its flight from Sydney to Auckland on Monday, March 11th, 2024.
LATAM Airlines described the incident as a strong movement caused by a technical event that occurred during the flight. 13 people were taken to a hospital, and one patient was believed to be in serious condition.
Technical issue, right? It wasn't turbulence, it was a technical issue, and that was on the Dreamliner. Again, one of the ironic things is this thing's called the Dreamliner. It's more like a nightmare, and it's like inversion. Now let's look at another flight. This is a 737 from March 6th. Okay, that one was from, I think, like March 12th or 13th, they said. This is from March 6th. Listen to this.
Let me know what you need.
Yeah, American 738, we'd like to come back around and land.
American 738 is an emergency?
Yeah, we're going to declare an emergency. We have a wing body overheat light right now. I can't get the autopilot to engage. I'm going to get the light on here and tell you how many people I got. We got 147 people on board the aircraft. We got about 260 minutes worth of fuel and declaring an emergency.
American 738, understand it's a wing body indicator light?
Wing body overheat light. It's a pretty, it means there's a bleed air leak in the aircraft.
American 738, turn right heading 060, maintain 5000. Which runway do you need?
Oh, give us the long one.
American 733, roger, expect runway 26 left.
26 left, American 738.
American 738, give me the pounds of fuel on board and Sagan the souls on board.
Okay, we have 147 souls. What else did you want to hear for American 738? We've got 26,000 pounds of fuel.
Roger. American 738, any hazmat on board?
No hazmat, American 738.
Wow, that's eerie. How many souls do you have on board? Not how many human beings, not how many people, how many souls? In the event that it goes down, that's that disconnect there. It's kind of eerie. And those are just from earlier this month. This is just in March. And they've had issues. Okay, January 5th, a door panel blew off a 737 MAX 9 jet during a flight from Oregon to California. Okay, it appeared to be missing four key bolts. The CEO of United threatened to shun Boeing after the carrier's fleet of MAX 9 aircraft was grounded in the wake of the near disastrous door blowout. She said it can happen again. The NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, chair said it can happen again, adding there was a problem with the process of production. Gee, I wonder why. We just heard what goes on in their production plants. He said, a week after the initial incident, when a Boeing plane was forced to make an emergency landing in Japan due to a crack in the cockpit window. So you're seeing all sorts of issues here. It's not just one. A 757 lost its front tire as the aircraft prepared for depart from an international airport in late January. And at Atlanta International Airport, a Delta flight bound for Bogota, was taxiing across the runway into a takeoff position when another plane alerted the control tower that something was amiss. Later, a UK passenger was alarmed after noticing pieces of tape on the exterior of a 787 during a flight to India, and she had photos of it, apparently. United Airlines Boeing 777 suffered a mid-air fuel leak and was forced to make an emergency landing on March 11th, marking the fifth incident the airline reported in a little over a week. Okay, so one of the customers, Ryanair CEO Michael Leary, previously said he's made loud complaints to Boeing over quality control. And what have they done? Doesn't appear anything. Okay, let's look at another one. Look at this. How crazy is this right here? Look at this. Look at that. Ripping off the coating, ripping off the engine. One of the jets. Jet engines. Crazy. Okay. So let's go back to the origin of the major origin in the last decade. So in two MAX 8 737s crashed in Indonesia and Ethiopia in October of 2018 and March of 2019, killing 346 people. And it temporarily grounded all jets, Boeing jets, that is. Boeing announced in 2019 that it would give $100 million to the family and communities impacted by the fatal crash. Eventually, the FAA cleared Boeing 737 MAX to fly again in November of 2020. Last December, Boeing urged airlines to conduct inspections on their 737 MAX jets for potential loose hardware in the aircraft's rudder control systems. The company warning came after an unnamed international airline discovered a bolt with a missing nut during a routine maintenance inspection. Okay, we just talked about they've been having door plug, right? And that's what caused the blowout in the January incident. All right. Days after the January crash, a second group of passengers filed a separate lawsuit in Washington State Court against Boeing and Alaska Airlines. The FAA announced that it would increase oversight into Boeing's production and manufacturing, including via an audit of the 737-9 MAX production line. The FAA cleared Boeing 737-9 MAX 9 aircraft to resume flights at the end of January, and we've seen what's happened since. Okay. Then in February, Boeing announced that some 50 undelivered 737 MAX jets would be reworked after misdrilled holes were identified in some of the fuselages. I mean, this is insane. Three passengers from Alaska Airlines flight 1282 filed lawsuit against the airline and Boeing seeking $1 billion in damages. Okay, this is not good. The FAA gave Boeing 90 days to create a plan to address its systematic quality control issues. The company said it was totally committed to meeting this challenge and would develop the plan. I don't buy it. They're going to come up with some half-assed plan. You see it all the time. Okay, then what happens? March, okay. A federal watchdog in March highlighted roadblocks in the investigation into the door plug incident while additional issues with Boeing aircraft surfaced. The NTSB, National Transportation Safety Board, launched an investigation into a February United Airlines Boeing 737-8 flight in which the aircraft experienced stuck rudder pedals after landing. Several other Boeing aircraft flown by United Airlines experienced issues, including flames spewing from an engine and a lost tire after takeoff. So now there's some friction because the NTSB said it hasn't received documents from Boeing crucial to its investigation into the door plug blowout, despite the documents being requested numerous times. So you're seeing pushback from Boeing as they try and cover their tracks. Boeing said it had supported the NTSB's investigation and provided names of employees who would have relevant information. The NTSB revealed that Boeing overwrote security camera footage of repair work done to the door plug of the Alaska Airlines plane that experienced the blowout. Conveniently, overwrote security camera footage. Sounds a lot like when the cameras just so happened to be not working when Jeffrey Epstein was killed, or how only one camera was active outside the Pentagon to see a quote-unquote plane hit. Come on, guys. This is dirty shit here. So the FAA's audit of the Boeing 737 MAX unveiled numerous issues with the company's production process, including manufacturing process control, parts handling and storage, and product control. So it's an absolute disaster. Disaster. What are we looking at here? This is a 2021 documentary, and I've clipped it up a bit into, you know, it's a 50-minute or so documentary from PBS called Boeing's Fatal Flaw. And we're going to go through this. I'm going to, you know, play it, and we'll talk through it. But this is eye-opening.
Lion Air flight JC610 went missing from radar.
189 people were killed in the crash of Lion Air flight 610.
The Boeing 737 MAX 8.
The plane was a new Boeing 737 MAX.
What do we know about this 737 MAX 8?
The fastest selling jet in Boeing history, just introduced the year before.
We don't yet know what caused this crash.
A breakthrough this evening in the flight data recorder. It holds many of the keys.
The data from the black box quickly got to FAA engineers in the United States. The data showed what appeared to be a glitch, something repeatedly moving part of the plane's tail, controlling its pitch.
It didn't take long, just a couple of minutes, to see that there was rapid movement of the horizontal stabilizer. It's probably the fastest way to kill yourself in an airplane is to have the stabilizer malfunction.
My spine literally tingled when I saw the traces from the black box. The plane continually tried to push the nose down, and the pilots were trying over and over again to stop the plane. And in the end, they lose that battle.
What Boeing had not told airlines or their pilots was that it had put a powerful software system on the new airplane.
In the Lion Air crash, this system was receiving incorrect information, and that made a plane dive straight downward and destroy itself.
Inside Boeing, they quickly diagnosed the problem and began working on a fix. But they stood by the MAX as hundreds of them took to the air around the world, carrying thousands of passengers. The company alerted pilots about handling a potential malfunction.
Boeing and the FAA today warned airlines that sensors on 737 MAX 8 jets can malfunction.
Boeing are calling this a formal advisory, and it's been issued to the pilots.
The reporting showed Boeing knew that it was risky, but their response was to blame the pilots.
Pilots did not hit two cutoff switches. Boeing says that action was part of well-established protocols for all 737s.
And that led to a series of decisions that kept the plane in the air. And then we got another crash.
Okay. They blame the pilots. These are the guys, these are your guys in the front line. That's who they're blaming. They're saying it had nothing to do with the design, nothing to do with this system that they had in there. It was pilot error. And then it happens again. What? 5 months later? Check this out. This is the Ethiopian crash.
Breaking news out of Ethiopia, where a plane went down.
It was Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302, on its way to Nairobi from Addis Ababa.
For a new 737 MAX 8 jetliner crashed minutes after taking off.
Two crashes, the same plane, 346 people killed, an iconic American company's reputation in tatters. The story of the Boeing 737 MAX would end up exposing corporate deception and a broken regulatory process. But at the center was a software system supposed to keep people safe that instead led to their deaths.
You need to understand what was going on with Boeing at the time that the MAX program was launched. Boeing was billions of dollars over budget on its 787 program, on its 747-8 program. Airlines were thoroughly ticked off at Boeing over the delays, and Boeing was looking at the MAX to restore its own credibility.
Times reporters found insiders who said that Boeing executives had been putting the pressure on to design the new 737 quickly and cheaply.
Hear it right there. Quickly and cheaply. Again, what was Boeing known for? Quality, expense. They were willing to go the extra mile for quality. Now, nope, not anymore. We want it quick and we want it as cheaply as possible. And we're seeing the results right here. And it's only going to get creepier.
The specific engineer we spoke to was Rick Ludke. He helped design the cockpit in the MAX. And he talked a lot about how there was an obsession in limiting changes.
Yes. Program was a much more intense pressure cooker than I'd ever been in. The company was trying to avoid costs, minimum change to simplify the training differences, and to get it done quickly.
Ludke said Boeing management was so determined to avoid the expense of new training, they made a bold promise.
Sales had made a commitment with Southwest that for any airplane they delivered that had a new Level D differences training, Boeing would pay the company $1 million per every airplane delivered.
Okay, so that's key, right? If Boeing delivered these companies a new airplane and it required that their pilots needed additional training, Boeing would pay them $1 million. Think about that. So what are they going to do? Everything in their power to make sure that there's no additional pilot training. Now, it may be required, but they're going to make sure that it doesn't have to be take place. Slimy stuff here. Slimy.
If the MAX required simulator training, it would rebate Southwest $1 million per plane.
Per plane. Per plane. Okay, these people aren't ordering one plane at a time. Usually it's a handful or more. We're talking multi-million dollars at stake here. And what are they saying? They want it done as cheaply as possible. Minimum changes, minimum quality, you know, and not good.
And there's that incentive. That's why it was so important to Boeing that pilot training be kept to a minimum.
You know, happening in real flight. This is something you have to fix. And they leaned on a system that they had used once before in a military tanker. It was designed as a system on the plane to really just smooth out the way the plane handled.
It was MCAS.
It was designed for these extremely unusual maneuvers, situations that hopefully the plane would never get in, and to prevent the nose from getting too high, the system would move the stabilizer on the back of the plane to push the nose back down.
But inside Boeing, there were early signs of trouble.
One of the first documents we found was from November of 2012. A Boeing test pilot was flying the MAX in a flight simulator and trying to respond to an activation of MCAS. And that resulted in what he described as a catastrophic event.
Okay, now that's a key point there, because that was 2012. And in a simulation, he had a catastrophic event with this MCAS system where they could not fix it, right? So they knew in 2012 this was an issue. The crashes started happening in 2018. They had 6 years and they just ignored it.
Boeing.
And not only did they ignore it, listen to what they did.
From almost the very beginning, realized the significance of MCAS and the significance MCAS would have on pilot simulator training. If we emphasize MCAS is a new function, there may be a greater certification and training impact. Recommended action: investigate deletion of MCAS nomenclature. What that meant was that if they said MCAS was a new function, the FAA was going to scrutinize it a lot more.
So instead of getting scrutinized by the FAA, and instead of making pilots get trained, they wanted the whole nomenclature of MCAS deleted from the record, deleted from the manual. That's insanity. That's criminal.
Part of the story. But so are the regulators. The FAA regulated Boeing in part with a handful of Boeing employees whose paychecks came from Boeing, but whose jobs were to represent the interests of the FAA.
Do you see a conflict of interest there? Boeing employees working for the FAA against Boeing to work in the FAA's best interest. It's a recipe for disaster. And this is one of the problems I mentioned earlier. This is lobbying, right? This is what they're doing. They're putting people in positions or getting in on sides of politicians where they can have regulations and laws passed that benefit them. And this is another instance of it, and it only gets worse.
Ali Barami.
I'm Ali Barami. My job at the FAA is to lead and manage aviation safety organization.
In the midst of a long career at the FAA, Ali Barami had left to spend 4 years as a lobbyist for the Aerospace Industries Association.
While he's in that lobbying role, he says, We urge the FAA
to allow greater use of delegation, not only to take full advantage of industry expertise, but to increase the collaboration that improves aviation safety.
So here's the guy who would ultimately lead the FAA's safety operation, encouraging the FAA to let industry do as much of its certification work as possible.
So basically what he's saying is let these people self-regulate, right? Let them take care of it. They'll do the right thing. And as we see, they do not.
Things would be delegated to Boeing. That included MCAS.
Under the impression that this was a relatively benign system, the FAA agreed to delegate it, as is the custom with the FAA and Boeing. And that's what happened in this case. It handed it over.
Mark Forkner and some of his colleagues, in one of these emails that Mark Forkner sent out, he says, "I want to stress the importance of holding firm that there will not be any type of simulator training required to transition to MAX." And he said, quote, "Boeing will not allow that to happen."
He was this key liaison between the company and the FAA.
He was the person who personally emailed the FAA asking for MCAS to be removed from the pilot manual. That was an important piece of this because we understood that the FAA really didn't know that MCAS became more powerful.
He was following through on a policy by Boeing to ensure that the program did not have to put pilots in a flight simulator.
It got to the point where Mark Forkner got an award for keeping training on the 737 MAX to a minimum.
How crazy is that?
Boeing CEO...
He got an award for keeping training of pilots to a minimum. Insanity. Insanity.
Ms. Mullenberg appeared before Congress.
Boeing's CEO is expected to acknowledge that his company made mistakes.
And here's the first time this guy's in the hot seat.
By then, he'd become the face of the 737 MAX crisis.
I've been on this committee a long time. We have never undertaken an investigation of this magnitude.
We intentionally put the families close to the witness. They're the victims here. And it should be like, you know, a trial in court where you get to face the person who, you know, who committed a violent act against you.
The committee confronted Mullenberg with an array of internal Boeing documents.
The next slide. This shows that Boeing became aware that the disagreement
was important. From this that Boeing understood how important
the pilots didn't know about this is unacceptable.
Boeing's marketing representatives emphasized to potential customers that FAA had reduced the length of pilot training. That
slow reaction time scenario, 10 seconds, found the failure to be catastrophic.
For those families, the pain of this was accentuated because this evidence that was going up on the screen was information that they felt that Mr. Mullenberg could have used to inform his decision about keeping the plane in the air or not.
We do know that Boeing engineers actually proposed placing a MCAS enunciator in the cockpit.
Are we vulnerable to a single AOA sensor failure now, with the MCAS?
As you emphasize, flight control will now compare inputs from both AOA sensors. And I guess the question is, why wasn't it that way from day one?
Mr. Chairman, we've asked ourselves that same question over and over. And if back then we knew everything that we know now, we would have made a different decision.
If we knew everything that then that we know now, we would have made a different decision. No shit. And you had chances to make a different decision and you didn't. That's negligence or just flat out incompetence. There's no other way around it.
To this day, I think Boeing doesn't accept full responsibility for these crashes. There's always the implication that if the pilots had acted appropriately.
The pilots who weren't trained, right? The pilots who weren't trained on this, if they had acted appropriately, it wouldn't have happened. And who didn't allow them to be trained? Boeing. We saw that. They were adamant about no training. Why? Because it would have cost them money, significant.
Those 346 people would still be alive today.
We have some breaking news on Boeing.
In the settlement, Boeing admitted to misleading statements, half-truths, and omissions about MCAS. It agreed to pay $2.5 billion, $500 million to the families of the victims, and most of the rest to compensate the airlines. The FAA retested and approved the 737 MAX.
Notice that, though, too, that the families got a quarter of what the airlines got. The families got $500 million, you know, a little over $1 million a family. Is your loved one worth $1 million? And the airlines got about 500 million. They got 2 billion to the airlines. It's crazy.
It is once again flying passengers around the world.
All right. So we see that. Now, this is where it starts to get interesting. And we're going to listen to Alex Jones. And some of it's a repeat with some of the Al Jazeera reporting that we went through, but it's all relevant.
Is industrial sabotage. And certainly that's happened in history before. I don't know exactly what's happening, but I know with something as big as airlines, you're going to have regular parts that are even built well. They're going to fail. And you got a bunch of these new environmental designs that are made mainly out of plastic. The engines aren't as strong. There's all sorts of not tried and true things that engineers developed over the last 100 years that all this new technology, just like electric cars, you're going to have a lot of problems. Electric cars blow up, they burn.
Hey, and this is a good point right here. The other problem is the diversity, right? This DEI shit where they're putting people in that aren't qualified. They're not putting the most qualified people in. They're trying to fill quotas. And they say they're hiring, the FAA's diversity push includes focus on hiring people with severe intellectual and psychiatric disabilities.
Now they're trying to have electric jumbo jets. And then you've got the fact that the IQs are dropping. There's more and more problems in society and civilization. People don't care as much. That's in every industry. Then you've got the parts being made in China. You got the FAA again reporting that Boeing has per capita double the problems of its main competitor, Airbus, at least double. And you see a civilization that's beginning to fray at the edges and fall apart. When Al Jazeera talked to employees at Boeing, a large portion of them said they would not fly on the aircraft. Here's that report.
This is a Boeing factory in the U.S. state of South Carolina. Workers here in Charleston are assembling the company's flagship product, the 787 Dreamliner. But this footage reveals some have little faith in the plane they build.
Did you fly on one?
No.
You won't fly on one. Did you fly on one of these planes?
No, not really.
Of 15 workers asked randomly, 10 said they would not fly on the Dreamliner.
I won't fly on one of these planes because I see the quality of it going down around here.
An employee captured the footage after contacting Al Jazeera to tell us he had serious concerns about what he was seeing. At his request, we changed his voice.
With all the problems reported on the 787, there's 90% that's getting swept away, hushed up. It's an iceberg.
In another meeting, the source told us workers are often underskilled, uncaring, and in some cases on drugs.
I've seen a lot of things that should not go on at an airplane plant. People talking about doing drugs, looking for drugs.
It's all coke and painkillers and what's that other one? You can get meteor. It's a really good meteor. They don't drug test nobody.
I know they don't.
There's people who go out there and watch this smoke going up.
Do they?
Hell yeah.
Over the course of a year, Al Jazeera's investigative unit.
So I played you that Al Jazeera piece where the majority of the employees would not fly on the aircraft they talked to. And the majority of the employees said they were on hard drugs. But here's a really informative clip from a fellow I've been watching for years. He really nails it. Ian Carroll on the Boeing whistleblower that just got Arkansas-ed.
Dude, the Boeing whistleblower just turned up not alive. You know how Boeing's planes have been falling apart midair for the last year, like doors coming off, tires falling off mid-flight? Well, it turns out that this guy, John Barnett, who spent almost a decade as the quality manager for a plant making the 787 Dreamliner, one of the problem childs of Boeing, well, he retired in 2017, and he's been taking legal action against them ever since. He's been alleging things like, when a plane isn't getting built fast enough, they'll tell their dudes just to go and get scrap from the scrap bin, like broken parts and parts that didn't pass inspection, just slap them on there so the plane gets done in time. He also claimed that up to one quarter of the oxygen masks would fail if actually deployed, plus a number of other allegations that Boeing obviously denied. And then he wound up not alive in his truck in a car park on the 9th of March from a, quote, self-inflicted wound, but the spooky part is what he did right before that happened. Because see, this legal battle has been going on for years now. But just this last week, he gave a formal deposition in which he was questioned by Boeing's lawyers. So Boeing's lawyers just asked him a whole bunch of questions under oath about what he knows. And then that same week, he turns out to not know anything anymore. Right before he was due to undergo further questioning on Saturday. So what did they find out that he found out? That Now we're not going to find out. I mean, allegedly, obviously. If it was like an accidental death, like a car crash or something, that might, you might be able to go coincidence. But like, who fights a legal battle for years and years and years? And then the year when Boeing's problems are all coming to light and proving you right, then you decide to off yourself. Like once like the world is like totally turning to your side, then you're over it and you're going to just quit. I mean, really? So I don't know what's going on, but puts on Boeing.
All right, now let's go to several short clips of the dead whistleblower, the Arkansas-cited whistleblower, John Barnett. This is what he has to say from the grave.
One, this is not a 737 problem. It's a Boeing problem. And I know the FAA's gone in and they've done due diligence and inspections to assure that the door plugs of the 737 are installed properly and the fasteners are torqued properly. But my concern is, what's the rest of the airplane? What's the rest of the condition of the airplane? And the reason my concern for that is, back in 2012, Boeing started removing inspection operations off their jobs. So it left the mechanics to buy off their own work. So what we're seeing with the door plug blowout is what I've seen with the rest of the airplane, as far as jobs not being completed properly, inspection of steps being removed, issues being ignored. My concerns are with the 737 and the 787, because those programs have really embraced the theory that quality is overhead and non-value added. So those two programs have really put a strong effort into removing quality from the process. When I first started working at Charleston, I was in charge with pushing back defects to our suppliers. And what that meant was I'd take a group of inspectors and actually go to the supplier and inspect their product before they sent it in. Well, I'd taken a team of four inspectors to Spirit AeroSystems to inspect the 41 section before they sent it to Charleston. And we found 300 defects. Some of them were significant that needed engineering intervention. When I returned to Charleston, my senior manager told me that we had found too many defects and he was going to take the next trip. So the next trip he went on, he took two of my inspectors. And when they got back, they were given accolades for only finding 50 defects. So I pulled that inspector aside and I said, did Spirit really clean up their act that quick? That don't sound right. And she was mad. She said, no. Said the two inspectors were given 2 hours to inspect the whole 41 section and they were kicked off the airplane. One, this is not a 737 problem, it's a Boeing problem. When I first started working at Charleston, I was in charge with pushing back defects to our suppliers. I'd take a group of inspectors and actually go to the supplier and inspect their product before they sent it in. Well, I'd taken a team of four inspectors to Spirit AeroSystems to inspect the 41 section before they sent it to Charleston. And we found 300 defects. Some of them were significant that needed engineering intervention. When I returned to Charleston, my senior manager told me that we had found too many defects and he was gonna take the next trip. So the next trip he went on, he took two of my inspectors. And when they got back, they were given accolades for only finding 50 defects. So I pulled that inspector aside and I said, did Spirit really clean up their act that quick? That don't sound right. And she was mad. She said, no. Said the two inspectors were given 2 hours to inspect the whole 41 section and they were kicked off the airplane.
There you go. How crazy is that? Right? That's from the horse's mouth. This is the guy who had testified for 2 days and was about to testify for a third and ends up killing himself after 7 years of legal battle. When it's his last day before a June hearing that was upcoming, his last day of testimony, he kills himself. So let's listen here to a interview on News Nation with Ashley Banfield. If it decides to play. But what we're seeing here is just rampant negligence, rampant. And it wasn't like people weren't calling it out. There was people calling it out left and right, and it just kept going on.
For its part, the FAA listened, and it did find at least some of those concerns were valid. But Boeing allegedly didn't listen. Barnett claimed that his lifelong employer not only didn't listen to him, it punished him. And so he devoted his retirement to an explosive lawsuit that now technically is moot because he's dead. Last week, Barnett was in Charleston, South Carolina for depositions in the case, but he missed an appointment on Saturday and was found dead inside his pickup truck at the Holiday Inn. The authorities say they found a silver handgun in his lap, finger on the trigger. There was also a note in the passenger seat, but they're not saying what was in that note, not yet anyway. His attorneys say that none of this makes any sense. They say there was no indication that he was in any danger of taking his own life and that they want a full investigation. For its part, Boeing simply says, "We are saddened by Mr. Barnett's passing and our thoughts are with his family and friends." My thoughts can be summed up in one word, forensics. Did he kill himself or did someone kill him and make it look like he took his own life? Because forensics will tell you that story from beyond the grave. And that's why Joseph Scott Morgan is here. He's a certified death investigator, a forensic analyst, and a distinguished scholar of the stuff at Jacksonville State University. Okay, so Joe, if you shoot yourself in the head, your hand and the gunshot residue and the blood spatter and the trajectory, all that will tell the story, won't it?
Yes, it will. And understand this, the people that investigate suicides, this primarily falls to the coroner, the medical examiner. This is not necessarily a crime. So I find it interesting that the coroner has already stated that this is a self-inflicted gunshot. Unless the police can come up with more evidence that this was, in fact, something that was done at another's hand, and that's how we define homicide, death at the hands of another, then they're probably going to go with the conclusions of the coroner. Right now, the police are waiting on that final conclusion.
So there's a letter, they said, that was found in the seat beside him, and they're not releasing any details of that, which I also find unusual, because wouldn't you want to quell any of this internet frenzy by saying the letter was very clear? Help me understand, as a death investigator, is it frequent that there's a letter written under duress, a suicide letter written under duress, and can you tell?
Let's back up just a second. First off, suicide notes typically are atypical. I think people are surprised by that. You generally do not find a suicide note when people decide to take their life. They do it in a second most of the time. We in the medical legal community investigate probably at a rate of 2 to 3 suicides for every homicide. Suicides outpace homicides by that factor in this country. So we have a lot of experience at this. One of the things they're going to be doing, if this was a handwritten note, is that they're going to have exemplars, and this is typical what we do, to look and see how this compares to his handwriting. Now, as to whether or not there was stress involved in this, if it was something that he was forced to do, that's going to have to take it up to a different level. Probably the FBI would get involved in that.
So what about the hotel parking lot, the Holiday Inn, and then the part that he's in a car in public? I'm trying to sort of place that amongst the norms of people who take their lives. Where does that fit in your, you know, spectrum?
Well, to be within a vehicle, firstly, you know, most of the time when we think about suicides in cars, we think about carbon monoxide exposure. We have a lot of those.
Yeah.
But no, it is not atypical for someone to take their life in a car. First off, it's an isolated area. Many times the victim will attempt to take their life in a car because they don't want to mess up the house. They don't want to mess up a location. That goes to almost a thoughtfulness on the part of these individuals. If this was a rental car, he could care less about the interior of the car. So the fact that he did it there is not surprising. It's also a fear many people have, I think, of not having their bodies found, that he didn't go off into the woods to do this. I think one of the keys here, though, you know, when they talk about a self-inflicted gunshot wound, is there any evidence that he was shot through the glass? Is there any evidence that someone else could have been in the vehicle? The key here is going to be GSR. I think the deposition of the antimony, the barium, and the lead. on his hand when they do this testing.
That's what I thought you were going to say. Not only that, but if the guy came from behind and shot him in the driver's seat, you know,
right.
That trajectory would be a different angle, too. Thank you for watching. Go to NewsNationNow.com to find NewsNation.
So there you have it. Very interesting. And, you know, unfortunately, I can attest to the fact that, you know, people do commit suicide in cars. My mother's ex-boyfriend took his life in his car in the garage and with a shotgun. So it's definitely something that happens. Now, what I find interesting is what he said about the note, that most of the time there isn't a note. And that was true in the case I experienced. There wasn't a note or anything like that. And obviously, as they investigate this, you know, and depending on how much faith you put in our system, it'll depend on what they find. But, you know, I found it very interesting because they're stressing that he was found with his hand still on the gun, right? So let's get into this a little bit. So the family of the Boeing whistleblower found dead on the day he was scheduled to testify against Boeing blamed the company's hostile work environment for his apparent suicide. They say, according to the article, that he was suffering from PTSD and anxiety attacks as a result of being subjected to the hostile work environment at Boeing, which we believe led to his death, relatives of John Barnett said in the first remarks since his death. Barnett, who worked for Boeing for more than 3 decades as a quality inspector and manager before retiring in 2017, was found dead from what the Charleston County coroner ruled a self-inflicted gunshot wound in his truck in the parking lot in South Carolina hotel Saturday, like they said in the video. The engineer was due in court to provide further testimony in his whistleblower lawsuit against Boeing, but never showed. A welfare check was requested and his body was discovered in his orange pickup with, and again, why do we need to know? It was a silver handgun in his hand. Now, this is, you know, an interesting thing. The report also noted that Barnett's driver's license was still in his room when he was found with a gunshot wound to the head and a pistol in his hand the following morning. Steve Chancellor, who has written 2 books on staged crime scenes and runs Second Look Training in Forensic Consulting, said that when someone dies by suicide, the gun only remains in a person's hand 25% of the time. He says, the mere fact that the gun was in his hand, I would pay attention to that. Because many times when someone is trying to make it look like a suicide, they make a mistake and they put the gun in the hand. The police report also said that a quote-unquote white piece of paper that closely resembled a note was found in plain view on the passenger seats, but its contents have not been disclosed. It said that Barnett loved working for Boeing until 2010 when he was transferred to the Boeing 787 plant in Charleston, is what his family was saying. Things greatly changed for him when he learned that upper management was pressuring the quality inspectors and managers to cut corners and to not follow processes and procedures, which they were required to follow by law. He said that the Boeing pressured workers to look past defects to avoid slowing down the assembly line, and those that refused were labeled as troublemakers, retaliated against, and subjected to a hostile work environment. Barnett, who is known as Mitch to his family and Swampy to his friends, told his family that it was an everyday battle to get management to do the right thing. He was deeply concerned about the safety of the aircraft and flying public and had identified some serious defects that he felt were not adequately addressed. He said that Boeing had a culture of concealment and was putting profits over safety. The job he once loved became so stressful, Barnett's doctor grew concerned for his health. It caused him so much stress that his doctor told him if he stayed, he would have a heart attack. Barnett was a quality control who worked for Boeing for 32 years before he retired in 2017, a decade prior to his plans due to fears of being fired for speaking up. He filed his complaint against his employer in 2017 and was looking forward to his day in court. Doesn't sound like a guy who was ready to off himself. Barnett became one of the several whistleblowers who helped expose allegations of quality issues at Boeing in 2019 New York Times investigation. Barnett said he found discarded sharp metal shavings near electrical systems for flight controls at Boeing's factory in South Carolina, which he said could have been catastrophic if the pieces pierced the wiring. After he raised the complaint to his supervisors, Barnett claimed he was moved to another part of the plant. And this is what they do. They make the employees' life hell. They move them around. They make it as uncomfortable as possible. Okay, so later that same year, Barnett told the BBC that he became aware of faulty installation of the aircraft's oxygen system, which could deprive some breathing mass of oxygen in the event of an emergency. And Barnett was saying that the testing found a failure rate of 25%. Boeing denied the claim. Barnett filed a pending whistleblower complaint with the government, which he had a hearing scheduled for this June, the AP reported. Late last month, Boeing was given 90 days to present a plan to fix systemic quality control issues that we talked about earlier. At the time of his death, Barnett was due to wrap up the final day of depositions ahead of a June trial date in a whistleblower case he filed against Boeing in 2017, alleging that the company retaliated against him for raising concerns about production issues. Mitch carried all this on his shoulders, trying to bring this all to light in the interest of the flying public, his family stated. Charleston police are investigating the circumstances of Barnett's death, which lawyers have raised questions about. We are saddened by Mr. Barnett's passing, and our thoughts are with his family and friends, is all Boeing would say. It did not comment directly on his family's statements. The airplane manufacturer has been under intense backlash following the midair blow of a door plug in January. A Federal Aviation Administration audit found dozens of problems with Boeing 737 MAX, including unacceptable quality control issues. Okay, and as we said before, Michael O'Leary, he's been screaming about this. He's the CEO of Ryanair. He said, "We have been loud in complaints about the lack of quality control at Boeing over the last 2 years. It is not acceptable that aircraft get delivered at less than 100%. I don't disagree. Okay. And this is where it gets even creepier, because supposedly John Barnett told his family if he died, it would not be suicide. And this is the same thing that Danny Castellaro was telling his family, and what happened to both. They committed suicide just as they were about to get their chance to bring their information as a whole to the public, right? So Boeing, he testifies for 2 days in this pretrial, gets his word out for two, but not the third day, decides to end it. When 2-3 months from now, he was set to have a trial with them for a lawsuit he filed. Doesn't sound like a guy who's looking to off himself here, but hey, what do I know? So let's listen to this. This is where it
gets. Yo, this whole Boeing whistleblower thing is getting more sus by the day.
Wasn't concerned about safety because I asked him, I said, aren't you scared? And he said, and his voice and the way he would talk, no, I ain't scared. He said, but if anything happens to me, it's not suicide. I think somebody didn't like what he had to say and wanted to shut him up and didn't want it to come back on anyone, so that's why they made it look like a suicide.
Now, at this point, we don't know what new information this deposition was going to bring against Boeing, but something we do know is that Boeing is now under criminal investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice. Mr. Barnett has already previously stated, quote, "I haven't seen a plane out of Charleston yet that I put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy." Now, he's gathered more evidence to back up his assertion that none of the thousands of planes that have come out of that South Carolina plant are airworthy. I can't even imagine. Meanwhile, another Boeing plane yesterday forced to make an emergency landing after a possible mechanical issue. This is the sixth reported incident involving a Boeing plane in the past week alone.
Okay, now, some people would say, oh, well, you know, that family friend, who is she? Well, actually, she is a close to the family. He, Barnett, was a pallbearer at her father's funeral in February or January recently. Her father's funeral was, her father passed recently, and Barnett was one of the pallbearers for her dad's funeral. So she's a close family friend. This woman seems to have connections to him and knows that, doesn't believe that this was a suicide. So, you know, I'm going to stay tuned with this story because this isn't the end of it. But once again, it's another sad, tragic ending to something that was looking to help the people. Right now, let's add the final layer to this. And this is what we always go back to, the money. Now, coincidentally, we have Congress people trading Boeing, selling off their Boeing stock, and right before this hearing. So multiple Congress members traded Boeing stock prior to problems surfacing to the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. Okay. Now, what's interesting is the Rep. Mike Garcia sold about 50K worth of Boeing Airlines and sits on the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. Very interesting. And year to date, Boeing's down about 27%. They weren't selling it earlier. Now, all of a sudden, the day before the hearing. Right? And that's what it says here. The timing of trades made by Congress can often alarm experts who follow their trading activity, including buying defense and oil stocks before supporting Ukraine's effort against Russia. This time, it was the sale of shares and notes of the Boeing company that caught the attention of Congress trading on Twitter. According to the Twitter account, Representative William Keating, a Democrat from Mass, sold closer to 65,000 in Boeing stock on February 28th. The DOJ, Department of Justice, announced it was investigating Boeing the following day. So he sold one day before. Just great timing on his part. Says Congressman Keating sold stock the same day or the day before it was reported that the Department of Justice was investigating Boeing. The account said the Department of Justice should investigate the trade and see if it made based on non-public information. Keating sits on the Armed Services Committee and the Armed Services Committee and Department of Justice. And he wasn't the only one. We have Utah Republican Blake Moore and Oklahoma Representative Kevin Hearn both sold stocks in the company in January. So we have all of these people selling off, knowing that something is coming down the pipeline. Okay, so this is not good at all, what's going on at Boeing. And again, I want to add one little layer to this, and that is this, you know, sabotage, like Alex Jones was saying, is this to instill fear in people of flying as part of the SDG Agenda 2030, where they want to keep you in these 15-minute cities, keep you limit travel, restrict your amount of free travel. And this would be a great way to do it. If they were to crash Boeing, one of the two giants in the aeronautical industry, I mean, talk about turning things upside down. That would cause havoc. So I don't know. Is it intentional? Is it part of this agenda? Are they making it look like it's, you know, right now? I mean, but to have six issues in a little over a week, that's something more. That's something much, much bigger. So we'll see. But again, and the reason why this caught my attention was, like I said, there's other whistleblowers that end up dead all the time. And it's usually ruled a suicide or robbery, or, and it's always something more devious, and usually something more devious, not always, but usually. I mean, I use the example of Danny Castellaro. You look at Seth Rich. You look at all the victims of Arkanside. You look at Gonzalo Lira, Julian Assange. All of these people were killed for putting out the truth. And again, what are the two things you don't touch? Profits and political power. Once you touch those two things, you can expect to catch some heat and potentially pay with your life. And far too many people have for speaking up against the machine. And that's one of the things we have to work on here, because we are currently in a corporatocracy. It's fascism at its finest. The corporations run this company. They make the policies. They lobby to get what they want, what's in their best interests to help their bottom line. And until we get out of this notion of, you know, quarter over quarter profits, constant growth, it's just a system that's going to eventually fail and break. And you're going to have things like this, because it's not natural, guys. None of this is. The whole Babylonian money magic and all that bullshit, it's all energy exchange. It's currency, right? It's called currency for a reason. And so I don't know. I'm just frustrated with all this, because when people speak up, when people try to do the right thing, they get shamed, they get killed, they get off, they get, you know, they're slandered. And we rarely find out the true story in the public. Or if it is, it is until years later. I mean, Danny was murdered in the early 90s. Still don't know the full story on that. John Barnett, hopefully we get some more answers. At least for the family's sake. You know, for you and me, it doesn't matter. For the case, now Boeing has a huge advantage because their major whistleblower is gone. That case, who knows what's going to be happen with that case that was scheduled for June now. And these are criminal charges, guys. Criminal. In addition to civil litigation, there was criminal charges against Boeing. So this isn't something that you just sweep. This isn't just a one-off thing. And as you saw here, I mean, lobbying, huge issue. We have to break this corporatocracy mentality, because it's killing our nation. It's eating itself. And hey, if that's the road you want to go down, and that's the life you want to live, where your life is strictly based on profit and how much money you have and things like that, okay. But I don't think that's what this realm was created for. And I think, again, it's another deception on many levels here. Not only do you have the deception by the corporations themselves, and the deception of, to the people that were killed, that were murdered by the negligence in these crashes, it's just not good. And who ends up bailing them out? It's usually the government in the end. They end up taking over and finding a way to maybe that's what they're looking to do. Maybe they're looking to take over the airlines. Who knows at this point? Things are so crazy out there. But I would just keep an eye on it, because I do think there's something more to this and what they're doing with the airlines. So stay tuned. And the next episode we are going to break down, it's going to be one or two parts. I got a bunch of great clips from the Netflix documentary, American Conspiracy, The Octopus Murders. Great documentary. I don't recommend Netflix much. I don't even have it. I just so happened to be at my sister's house a couple weekends ago, and they have Netflix, and I had a couple hours to kill at night. And while it's a 4-hour documentary, really highly recommend it if you can get your hands on it. But it's a story that I, you know, since I watched the documentary, I've been looking and digging up old documents and really am interested by it, and think everybody needs to know what went on and what goes on. This didn't stop either, guys. You know, Boeing isn't going to stop over this. It's how much do we have to pay? And then will you look the other way next time? We have to end that. It has to stop. This corporate greed, this incessant money over life, it's just disgusting. So, hey, if you want to support the show, Great Deception Podcast on Patreon. So go to patreon.com/The Great Deception Podcast. You can go to the merch store down in the link. You can leave a review. You can like the show. Share it with your friends. Do whatever you can. You can hit me up on Instagram, The Great Deception Podcast on Instagram. DM. And guys, if I don't follow you, I apologize for not getting your message right away, because I get a slew of junk messages from people I don't follow and spam and stuff like that. So I check it periodically, but I'm not that good with it. So I apologize if you're not there. If I don't follow your account, it goes into that folder and I might not get back to you right away. But I do check it periodically, because there are every now and then some legitimate messages in there, not just nonsense and spam and breastfeeding videos and people that want to promote my show and things like that. Just crazy things. So with that said, we are going to wrap it up right here. And guys, I hope you enjoyed this. Go check it out and stay tuned to this, because this isn't the end of this story by any means. This is just the beginning. And I think there's a lot more to this. But I thank you all for listening. Everyone, stay strong. Question everything.
That sets the Americans apart from the rest of the cultures in the world is we're so fucking stupid. This country's been around for a couple hundred years and we think we're hot shit. And we don't even realize that other countries have thousands of years of history and culture, and they're proud of it. And when we deal on an international level, you know, with foreign policy and stuff like that, and we try and go in as, you know, a big American strong country and all that stuff, they must laugh up their sleeves at us, because we are nothing. We are culturally nothing. We mean nothing. We're only interested in the bottom line. You know, every other country has their own art, their own music, their own theater, their own drama, their folk dances, folk songs, folklore, and it means something to them, and they're proud of it, and that's their ethnic heritage. We have Levi's, we have designer jeans, we have hamburgers, we have Coca-Cola, we have REO Speedwagon, we have Journey, we have this one, we have that one. And then we go out there and we say, yeah, but we also have neutron bombs and poison gas, so maybe that makes up for it. I mean, it's really kind of sad when you evaluate it that way. And I think that a country that doesn't do something to sustain its culture, whatever it is, doesn't invest in it, doesn't keep it happening, isn't proud of it, maybe they just shouldn't exist, because it's the culture.